Good morning, everybody. It is great to see you here. When I do these talks, just know that the number one person I may be preaching to is moi, holding up a mirror. You just get to see me struggle and wriggle my way and try to stop lying to myself. In this talk, I'll also be using the number 45 a lot. That number refers to our current president. Also in this talk, which I've been working on for about 6 months, I get rather personal and confessional, and you may want to have more conversation with me after the service downstairs over coffee. Yes. Also, let us keep in our hearts and minds that 1 year ago at this very hour, Charlottesville was happening. Let's begin. Two scenes from Tolkien. Where's my Tolkien lovers? Okay, you know. Two scenes from Tolkien's Lord of the Rings involving Gandalf the Wise. Scene one, Frodo and Gandalf are talking about the gathering terror of their days, and Frodo complains, "I wish this need not have happened in my time." "So do I," said Gandalf, "and so do all who live to see such times. All we have to decide is what to do with the time given us." The second scene takes place in the mines of Moria, right before Gandalf is lost on the bridge of Khazad-dûm. Taking his defiant position on the bridge, Gandalf proclaims to the Balrog monster pursuing his comrades, "You cannot pass." These days, I feel like I'm losing my mind. Do you hear this a lot these days, a political disaster piled upon political disaster? In these days, month, and past 2 years, there's been such a continuous and unrelenting assault against decency and sanity, when so much that we thought was nailed down about our American democracy has now come undone. Do you feel like you've run out of middle fingers? You can raise your hands. Are we losing our minds? These are difficult times. We're dealing with multiple catastrophes. Every day we wake up, I do, hoping that the world has changed for the better since we went to bed. There's real and imagined emergencies. There's legislative sneak attack and shenanigans. There's government policy by tweeter tantrum. There's Supreme Court stacking. There's leading with violence and misunderstanding and hate and leading with whiteness. A nation that chanted one time family values for decades now has a policy of family separation. It seems like that's a Hydra world. As soon as you cut one head off, two more emerge. Society's handles on power have been stolen from the Constitution, and the people are now being manipulated by the giant corporations, military, and rich elites. The economy now serves them, not children, not elders, not LGBTQ, not poor, not non-white. Food, housing, healthcare, education, transportation are increasingly luxury goods. The distribution of such are dictated not by cooperation, but by corporations of acquisition and given legitimacy by the myth of scarcity. Empire America tells us that we need those elites' weapons, the money, their food, their good favor to have a working society, and your retirement, don't forget, that there's no room for immigrant children, no room for poor non-white bodies. Take what you can. It's scarce out there. You see, it feels like we talk two political languages in our nation today, left and right. And both languages reserve strong vocabulary to demonize the other. Neither language can reason or argue its way to a common ground with the other language speakers, because each language disdains the other as most certainly not American. Both right and left demonize each other. Hate grows equally on both sides of the political spectrum. Is hate fertilized by seeing the other as truly other? And it's a water poisoned by the waters of self-righteousness. They're not worth my time. good only for talking trash about. Felt that? You see, our vocabularies do not understand the vocabulary of love, compassion, and how others may actually feel when they pull the curtains of the voting booth. So we long for some good news. Maybe some bloody conflict has finally ended. Maybe there's a realistic plan that emerged to combat climate change, that our politicians are now adopting altruism as policy. But instead, we mostly wake up to talking heads in foxholes, chattering about business as usual. Despair seems the only natural response. Lately, it's been hard to find much to cheer about. But I remain committed to the search, and that's why I'm here today. I wish this need not have happened in my time, says Frodo. So do I, said Gandalf. All we have to do is decide what to do with the time given to us. And so with little time left me, I'm 62, my time here is not to bash anybody. You'll hear no harsh words, although I may advise harsh measures. Get your tomatoes out. Instead, maybe it's time to take a breath, a long one, and take stock of who we are, who we want to become, and decide what to do with the time given to us. How we decide to say, you cannot pass. As most of you know, I am an ordained Baptist minister. My own faith tradition, Christianity, is rather embarrassed these days by its Jesus, this guy who practiced powerlessness to the very end. And Christians now are very quick to amend and modify his obvious defeat as a glorious victory. Don't sing with me. Victory in Jesus. Anybody came up on that camp song? Be lucky. His poverty. But what I'm trying to say is that we don't get this Jesus. His poverty is to become our riches, yes, but not riches measured in bank accounts or body counts. Let's face it, most of us do feel more powerful with power than powerlessness. Who wants to be like Jesus on a cross, splayed out on a death penalty machine of his day? Doesn't look like a good way to influence people. Not a way of defiance and get in touch with your inner middle finger. Hardly a way that's going to make any difference in the world. Jesus' way is often felt by my kind to be kind of a loser's kind of way. Christians worship, though, this homeless, bleeding loser crucified as the criminal that he was outside the walls of Jerusalem. But we balk when we learn that to love Jesus is to love the losers. And we Christian liberals often include with the losers the so-called deplorables on the other side of the political fence. They're just deluded. If they really knew who they voted for, they'll come around one day. So signal number one in today's talk is that our vocabularies do not translate the other side very well. Don't understand that love doesn't really work until it includes our enemy. Doesn't get befriending the deplorables. I'm not talking here about a cheap sentimental love. Martin Luther King, not my words, his words. This love is an overriding loyalty to the humankind as a whole in order to preserve what is best in individual societies. This calls for a worldwide fellowship that uplifts neighbors beyond their concern beyond tribe, race, class, and nation. And this is really an all-embracing and unconditional love for all of humankind. When I speak of love, I'm not speaking about some sentimental and weak response. I'm not speaking of that force that is so-called emotional bosh. I'm speaking of that force of which all the religions have seen as the supreme unifying force that leads to ultimate reality. This Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist belief about ultimate reality is beautifully summed up in the first epistle to John in the Christian scriptures. Love one another, for love is of God. What if love has something to do with it? Some people got that one. Home to point number two, projection. Psychological projection is a defense mechanism we subconsciously employ in order to cope with difficult feelings or emotions. Because, are you like me? I'd rather project my own deplorable feelings or emotions onto someone else rather than admitting to or dealing with my unwanted deplorable emotions and feelings stirring around in me. Rule number one, shift the blame to others before they shift it to you. We smear our neighbor with the blemish we wear. Don't like number 45? Let's see if he's exhibiting the same attitudes or actions that I despise in myself already. My dear brother Donald in the White House, let's get this straight, is a child of God. He's just chosen to act like a gangster. So it's more difficult for us or me to see the images of God in him than it is, say, for Pope Francis. But before I see the gangster proclivities in Donald, I have to see them active in me too. Do I hate? Do I conspire? Do I want revenge? You should see the revenge videos up here. My own gangster life enables me to project what I hate in myself onto convenient targets, the president and his men. If I see him as only giving me multiple chances to feel superior to him, is that integrity? We've met the enemy, and they continue to be us. You see, number 45 is as American as apple pie. He comes out of America. He is us. We produced and then promoted him. Wall Street, Main Street, White Avenue, Mail Circle, Perpetual War Boulevard. They've all helped. He is our own. He is us. If we want to be outrageously indignant about 45, let's start being outrageously indignant about ourselves. I heard an amen. Thank you. Are his policies dangerous? Unthinking? Short-sighted? 1,000 times yes. Yes. But we must be clear about our own homegrown dangers, prejudices, and short-sightedness before we can become clear about him. My grandmother and yours had something to say like this. If you see somebody with a dirty backyard, clean out your own backyard before you mention theirs. Yeah? So let's practice humanizing, not dehumanizing. I mean, have you ever been convinced, or have you ever convinced someone that you don't like to change and start being human by first belittling them, or ridiculing them, or threatening them? It don't work. So here's my guilty secret. Don't tell anybody. I rejoice in this president. Why? Because he helps me and maybe us get back in touch with what a life of integrity and bravery and love really looks like. It is for such a life that I think we're made. And I give thanks to anybody who can help bring that home. If Leonard Cohen is right, and I think he is, there's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in. Yes, you've heard this song. If we walk around with hatred and prejudice all day, Marley, we're just as much a killer as the one who pulls the trigger and pulls out the gun. This seems to be what UU, at its best, and all religions teach. You see, the evil and genocide of Germany, World War II, was the final result of centuries of negative thinking among good German Christians. The tragic fascism of Hitler was a festering in German hearts for generations and fed by culture and myth and press long before Hitler came to catalyze these resentments. And we may be seeing the same kind of thing here. So we must change our language. Bilingual. Children of boats are not migrants. They're people. They're us. They're not they. They're us. We're all included. We're all in the same boat. Prisoners are just those who happen to get caught. Don't tell anybody, but I should be in prison now, or at least out on parole for all the I've done. We must be pioneers who study how to live by learning how to die, letting projected presuppositions go, letting the ego go, old and outdated worldviews even of number 45, letting them all just go. I'm speaking about spiritual integrity, about understanding a situation or another human being to the point where you could say, I could be wrong. Part 3, learning to die. I've been up here a lot talking about death. People often misunderstand when I do what it means to learn to die. It's not very American. We're supposed to accumulate, live long, do the Rogaine thing, right? I speak of a kind of lifestyle, a spiritual practice in which we mindfully shave away every day all that must not continue. Like Michelangelo meditating before that massive marble piece that was soon to become David, we whittle away all that is not David. We must practice resurrection by practicing how to let go, let loose, fly. If you want to fly, you have to let go of all that weighs you down. Letting go of those attitudes, possessions, projections, even abilities that we would not want our children to inherit. There are things we need to lose before we can even see or save and then practice what we love. Socrates taught that. So did Buddha, Jesus, Martin Luther King. The way truly to live is to practice the art of dying. Because only that which is dead can then be resurrected. Dying to hate of number 45 or ISIS or anyone else is a precondition of spiritual progress. Without such dying, forget your free will. Knowing how to die prepares one for the way to live, and one can step out in vulnerability and love with confidence. If no free will, no love. If no love, we run out of gas. Dining only on diets of hate produces spiritual cancer, terminal. But choosing love, choosing resurrection, is always worth the risk. At some point, we have to remember and then act that even though it is a bitter winter, there is still inside each of us an invincible summer. And so I call on us. Here's where I start getting Baptist on you. I start to call on us to start practicing intentional, mindful, first-degree murder on all that is within us that cannot, should not survive this already terror-filled world. To live, practice dying. I consider it a sign of hope to see Brother Donald as a child of God, as much in need of correction as I. I, too, am a product of white, male, class superiority. To practice resurrection is to bear witness that all beings are children of God, and thus we are fallible at best and gangsters at worst. But folks, that's a choice. That's a choice. I can say it no plainer than this. Life trumps death. Life has the last word. Love always finds a way. Love will always have its day. Let's bring this home. I'm calling for a conversion to the long march of love's discipline, a love that does not stop at one's enemy's doorstep but knocks on the door and asks to come in. Seed, S-E-E-D, seed the future with a love that is much more ready to die than to kill. This conversion starts within oneself, transforms the enemies, the engines of projection and hate, into compassionate fields in which love gets planted and grown and then harvested. Let your phones be smart. We got to become wise. We've got to find a way to come together. And I'm going to be some audience participation here in just a moment. We've got to come together to find a way to speak this loving truth to power. To ICE, we must lovingly announce, you cannot pass. To inhumane health care, you cannot pass. To never-ending war, you no longer can pass. To energy policies as irresponsible as they are geared to the wealthy, you cannot pass.
You cannot pass.
What needs to be said that to? Who needs to hear that now in your worlds? What do we need to say that to?
Ourselves.
As you practice, you cannot pass. Do them in the company of your children, grandchildren. Seed the future. Let them learn the ways of dying, because at base, aren't we all just dying to live? Okay, folks, have I been too political? A word to those who might say that I am. There's no such thing as being non-political. All we do and say either confirms or critiques the status quo. To say nothing is to give a thumbs up to the status quo. And that status quo is deadly. The silence of religious people is used to legitimate the United States' obsession with weapons, with drones, its war against the poor, Israel's clear abuse of Palestine, politicians who are proudly pro-life on the issue of abortion, but are almost nothing else. The de facto slavery of mass incarceration, and on our liberation is not in fighting or taking sides on these issues, but by learning how our liberation is bound up in everyone else's. Every day, there's no timeouts. Neutrality and injustice only strengthens the hand of injustice. Of course, as we march forward and say, you cannot pass, we will and can be run over, out-legislated, shot, outspent. Getting to the promised land may take a long time, folks, but we are made of stubborn obedience, with ears tuned to the other, with eyes set on compassion, and compasses set for the transformational. Let me get downright Calvinistic on you. We are made for these days. If we understand this and act on it, not only will life itself become more satisfying right off the bat, but our children and grandchildren will see a different and marvelous world. It's precisely for these times, dear Gandalf, that we were made. What time do we have left to us? We who are waking up must find multiple levels of ways to use the tools of love so that our dreams about democracy and equality and living well do not die with this generation. Come together, overlap, overhear, interweave, drink from many wells, eat at many tables, cross-pollinate your compassion. Would you like a revitalized congregation, this congregation that's always already strong? Would you like it even more revitalized? Who doesn't? Just form a group of committed love warriors to address one problem in this or a nearby zip code. It could be immigration. It could be prisons, it could be elder abuse, it could be sex abuse, sex trade. All it takes is just a few people committed with love and saying, you cannot pass, not on our watch. Then these committed love warriors will come back into the space and tell us all how they witness lives being changed. And that'll shake, rattle, and roll any sleeping congregation. Do we have what it takes? It depends on how we choose to use the time given to us, what voices we raise, what courageous love we practice. Let's at least, like Muhammad Ali, go down swinging. Where are the Muhammad Ali's, the Nelson Mandelas, the Mother Teresa's, the Dorothy Days, the Dietrich Bonhoeffer's, the Pope Francis's? They are right here amongst us, alive and amazing, deciding what to do with the time left to us. The peace agreement talks are not between liberals and conservatives anymore, but among and within all of us. Let's join the love train. We must know what it means to fall in love with living joyfully again, even though we have considered all the facts. We must drink deeply of love and drown the hate, quench the thirst that only love satisfied. The glass is not half empty. The glass is not half empty, and it ain't half full. It's half yours. and is half mine.